and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for joining us on the show this week. My guest speaking to us by phone from his office is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half hour. You can always send those via email to ask@wbaa.org. You can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter, or you can call them in. 765-496-1999 is our telephone number. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you. Good to talk to you as always.
Stan, good to be with you today.
So I've been getting some regular email updates, as a lot of other people have, from your city's PR director, and a lot of them pertain to some of the road construction that we talked about a number of shows ago. And I wanted to get an update from you. You had said that some of the bids had pleasantly, to your surprise, come in lower than you thought they would, meaning you're going to get more done this construction season than you had initially anticipated. I wanted to get an update from you on how all of that is transpiring.
It's coming along, Stan. So right now we have about $1 million of paving projects that will be carried out this calendar year. We also have applied through the state of Indiana for the newly implemented Community Crossings Matching Grant. So we have $225,000 set back in rainy day right now from that special LOIT redistribution that came down from the state of Indiana. So if we are awarded those three additional projects that we're looking at by year's end, we actually could be seeing, instead of $1.45 million put into our roadways, since that grant is a dollar-to-dollar match. Residents should expect to see the dust start flying after Labor Day. We'll have our second round of paving done at that time. They will be working on Alhambra Avenue in the community from Jackson all the way up to Ricker Drive, and then they will also be doing some work throughout the TPA Park and the East Side Park. Our parks have kind of had their backs turned to them over the past couple decades in terms of pavement work, but since we were able to get so many of the dire streets done in the city this year, we also wanted to turn our attention to our parks. They do receive a lot of traffic, those two parks in particularly, when it comes to softball, Little League, and our renowned and famous now, I believe, Christmas light display in the winter months in TPA Park. So those are the changes during the second half of the year, and we'll see how that Community Crossings matching grant comes back. And we have applied for North Main Street, Barner Street, and South Hoke in that program. So a lot of paving, and it was much needed.
Well, while we're talking about some of the money that you're spending, let's talk a little bit and spend a few minutes on the budget discussions for the coming year. You're in the midst of that right now. I see where the county received a nearly 25% increase in its budget requests for this year. And I'm curious, have you seen anything close to that trend from your department heads who have submitted those back to you and ultimately to the city council?
No. I work with my department heads up front, so I started this process 3 or 4 months ago. And really, you can say the process for me started 5 years ago. One of the first things that we did, and I've talked about it on this show before, I sat down with my department heads, and I work with a financial group called Reedy Financial. We developed a 5-year capital improvement plan for our city. So we not only looked at the infrastructure that you and I talk about, like roads, streets, gutters, and sidewalks, but we also looked at the infrastructure inside our city departments. And we have a strategic plan over the past 4 years and moving into the coming years of how strategically and responsibly we're replacing infrastructure within our departments on an annual basis, not only to plan but to control costs as well. So what I always like to tell my department heads is whatever that state growth quotient is, we've got to stay within that state growth quotient. If anything, I want to see things, I want the belt tightened as much as possible. So this year we found out that state growth quotient was indeed going to be about 3.8%. Our state is covering from the recession days in 2008 and 2009. So the budget that I presented to my council in all of the various departments stayed within 3%. Actually had one department, our building inspection department, we were actually able to present a negative 1% forecast moving into next year. So we do have a very good budget laid out. I had a councilman tell me, he's been a councilman for over 20 years, that yesterday was the smoothest process that he's ever seen. The other thing I'll tell you, Stan, what I focus on is building our percent of cash reserve in our city. So looking at how I build that surplus on an annual basis, and I can tell you the budget that I presented next year year would include about $14.5 million in spending. That's not just City General. That's all of our various budgets, ending with a surplus projected of $298,000. That would put the City of Frankfort's ending cash balance at about $5.5 million, which gives us about a 38% cash reserve. And it's my goal to continue to march towards a 50% cash reserve in this city. So I'm hoping that not only our administration and City Council continues this very diligent and prudent financial planning, but future administrations will do it as well.
You mentioned that the building department was able to reduce its budget by 1%. What allowed that to happen when most other budgets are going up?
Well, over the past few years with that capital improvement plan, we've been able to strategically on an annual basis replace some of the automobiles and the trucks that they need for their code enforcement on a daily basis. We've updated the laptops and the different pieces of technology that they need in the field. And so by spacing that out over the past 4 years, we don't have any major capital expenses next year. And because of that, we were able to drop that equipment line item substantially, which is a really good portion of the building inspection budget since they only have about 5 full-time employees. So that's what contributed to that decrease specifically.
What can city employees in terms of raises be expecting?
I can tell you a little discussion amongst the council yesterday. I think that they're looking at a 3% across the board. You know, we like to strive for that. We know we've got to take care of our employees, but at the same time, we've got to protect the taxpayer. And with that state growth quotient being at 3.8%, I believe the council can justify an across the board 3% raise. I think that's the direction they're leaning right now. The other important thing for our city employees to know, we've had great due diligence on our health insurance side, which any organization, that's going to be one of your largest overhead expenses, is supplying your employees with good health care coverage. We've went to a partially self-insured model. So for us specifically, we take care of claims from our city budget up to a $100,000 claim. After a $100,000 claim, full insurance kicks in. And we've been able to control those costs with really focusing on workplace safety and wellness amongst our employees. So by doing all of that, we're going into a renewal state that I don't see any increase to that health insurance line item for next year. So for our employees, it's good for them to know that potentially 3% across the board, but perhaps even just as importantly, especially for young families that are having children, we're going to be able to maintain the health insurance policy that we have right now, giving them that good coverage.
Let me ask you about those benefits, because I see where there was a study done recently about how good the city's benefits are, and it appeared to show that your folks get very good benefits compared to other similar employers that were surveyed. But do I understand correctly that there is talk of changing the benefit structure somewhere to try to save the city some money?
Well, when I came into office, our health insurance line item was $3.3 million. We were fully insured. The policy was completely out of control from a cost standpoint. City General's just a little over $9 million. So literally a third of that was going towards health benefits. And yeah, I mean, our employees, they deserve great health care benefits, but like I said, at the same time, that affects the amount of paving that you can do, the amount of sidewalks that you can rebuild, how nice you can make your parks. So there definitely has to be a balance. So, you know, I set out to work with the Health Insurance Committee, and this wasn't just me. This was across the work board by our City Council, by our Utility Service Board. And we flexed a few of the things within our policy. We flexed the co-pays for emergency room visits. We flexed deductible and out-of-pocket maximums very mildly. And moving to this partially self-insured model has given us the ability to take what was once 3.3 down to $2.35 million. And as we move forward, we're going to work on a 5-year strategic plan that includes more wellness, that includes more buy-in from the employees to not only exercise annually, but to go get that annual physical, to have your glucose checked, to have your cholesterol checked, and get a little more buy-in from them in terms of earning that health reimbursement account that we give them on an annual basis. We believe if we do that, not only is it going to be great for them, they're going to make themselves healthier, but it's going to further control our costs.
What will that mean in terms of out-of-pocket cost for the average city employee, though?
Well, right now, for example, you know, my deductible as a family, I'm around $1,500. All that would mean is for me to get that $1,500 health reimbursement card on an annual basis, I need to earn that. I get so much by making sure I go to the YMCA maybe at least once or twice every other month. I need to go in and I need to get my glucose and my blood pressure checked regularly. And then I might also be incentivized for not choosing to smoke. So if I choose not to smoke, I might also be incentivized for that. So it's not so much as a decrease to the employee as it is saying, work with us. We want to help to keep you healthy. We want your well-being to be kept in mind. So we're going to offer these incentives to earn that money on that health reimbursement account.
But won't it mean that you'll have to pay for a membership to the Y or something like that, which would, of course, be an out-of-pocket cost to the employee?
No, actually, we're already thinking about that. The YMCA has approached the city. They're actually having a capital fundraising campaign right now. They're asking the city for funds for a capital fundraising campaign. So that's a part of the negotiation. If the city do chooses to move forward and support the Y, and I want to be very clear, that's yet to be determined, but if that's done, work with us on a benefit package for our employees to give them the assurance that they're going to have access to the Y through memberships. And then, you know, there would also be things taken into account. We have a full gym at our police department. We have a gym at our fire department. So there is access if the employee wants that right now without a membership that they can go into these facilities and get some exercise in.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'd love you to be a part of this conversation. Call in your questions at area code 765-496-1999. Tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter or email them to ask@WBAA.org. Were there any budget requests that came in during this cycle that were significantly higher than you thought they needed to be and you had to make some cuts?
No, not as of yet. Again, that was just, we did a lot of front-end work on this budget with the clerk treasurer, with Reedy Financial and my department heads, and it's just managing that capital improvement plan. So coming into this year with the work that's been done in the past, it was a very smooth process. The big items for us going into next year's stand is continuing to focus on paving. I believe taking all the budgets into account, we have a little over $330,000 for paving next year. We move forward with our continued improvements on Washington Avenue, which you and I drove. So next year we'll be in the right-of-way acquisition phase of that, negotiating with property owners. We also have several enhancements in our parks planned for next year, adding a basketball court, continuing to upgrade our restrooms, and also replacing some much-needed playground equipment, along with upgrading and rebuilding our bird aviary. So a lot of quality of place improvements. And then also I did make a request under the Board of Works budget to the county Council for some downtown improvements. I asked them for $100,000 to continue to implement our downtown revitalization plan, rebuilding sidewalks, putting in adequate street lighting, working on streetscapes, really adding to the quality of place of Frankfort to draw young professionals, to draw talent, to make us the best business culture in America. And that goes back to investing as such that makes Frankfort a beautiful place to live, work, and play. So there's a lot of components that add to that train of thought in this budget that we're proud of.
Let me ask the other side of it, which is, was there anything that you had hoped to fund or fund more than will actually get funded?
You know, there's always more that you could be doing. Of course, you know, to implement that downtown revitalization plan is going to cost exponentially more than what I'm going to have the capacity to do next year. But again, you know, it's keeping the big picture in mind and just strategically planning year after year after year and taking chunks off of that, doing things as you can afford them, just like a family household does. So it's just going to be staying very diligent on implementing a small part of that plan each and every year. So that would be the one thing that I wish there was simply more there for. But, you know, with health insurance costs, compensating our employees adequately, keeping our police vehicles renewed on an annual basis, all of that is just as important. And it's all one big puzzle that has to be strategically fit together.
On to other things. I wanted to talk about something with you that I talk about fairly frequently with the other three mayors on this program, and that is train service, passenger train service. I had a source who told me that they had heard that you were getting asked by out-of-town investors what the access was in Frankfort to rail travel. Is that something that you're getting asked with any regularity?
No, I actually haven't. I've had 1 5-minute conversation with Arlito because I understand that there's some conversation to build some type of a transit mechanism from Indianapolis to Chicago. You might know more about that than I. Really, the only conversations I've had regarding rail in our community is always industrial. We have a CSX line, we have an NNS line in our community, and our industries, especially on the north side of 28, heavily rely on that rail spur to move their goods. So, you know, as we plan for land use in the industrial park, and as we acquire certain property rights in different areas through not-for-profit groups like the Clinton County Economic Advancement Foundation, we always try to make those decisions with the rail spur in mind, knowing that that's so very important to continue to increase the amount of industrial opportunity that we have in Frankfort. That's one thing we have going for us is our rail access. But from the passenger car side, I really haven't. No one's really talked to me about it, and I haven't had any in-depth conversations regarding that.
All right. I was looking at your city's website this morning, and it seems to me that you guys have a similar issue to something that I've talked about with Todd Barton in Crawfordsville. It's kind of hit or miss whether documents from public meetings, especially minutes, get posted. For instance, it's been nearly 2 years since your city council meeting minutes have been posted on your city's website. Do you have a plan in place to remedy that?
Well, I'm sitting here and looking at the website now, Stan, and we need to look at that procedure, obviously. You know, in a city of our size, and there's no excuses, it should not be that difficult to get minutes uploaded onto our city website. In a city of our size, the mayor's office, I have myself and one administrative assistant. Obviously, there's a lot of demands on our clerk treasurer in our city. We don't have a dedicated IT department that updates minutes like this, but it's something that you've definitely brought to my attention, and we can put a process in place to make sure that those meeting minutes are getting put up in an efficient manner. Also, something that we've talked about, elaborating on creating more accessibility through our website. Our city council talked about it yesterday in the budget hearings, is adding a video component to our council chamber halls once we get back into Old Stoney with all the upgrades and renovations. The citizens would have access, either in an archived fashion or real time, to see the city council meetings. I know that there's a live feed app through Facebook right now that you can stream meetings in a live format. And so that's all things I think we need to look at. And obviously, in this instance, there's no beating around the bush. We just need to do a little bit better job of getting those meeting minutes up on our website for people to peruse.
Especially as you're going through a budget process and you're looking at things such as personnel, is it a possibility you could find somebody who could do social media, web posting, the kind of electronic communication that I think people are coming more and more to expect from a connected 21st century city, especially one like you're trying to build that is attractive mm-hmm. to young professionals?
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And actually, Stan, for you to know, that's one thing the city council has hit me hardest on. When I came into office, I utilized our professional services line item. At the time, it was a $95,000 line item. It has since been pared back to $35,000, which, again, I'm striving to live within the means. Every budget that I have is a balanced budget, and we do that with pride. But one thing they hit me the hardest on is I started implementing utilizing communication services as an important cornerstone in our administration to do the things you're talking about, getting out media advisories, keeping the public informed. Obviously, I do what I can to take pictures every day, post on Facebook. I use Instagram, our city website, but I can only do so many things at once. I'm one person, and actually that's the one thing I've been criticized on the most is the use of dollars to engage communication services professionals to help with the items that you and I have talked about. And as a young person, I understand the need for it. I understand how people crave information online. And that's something at times when I work with individuals that are just maybe a little bit more seasoned than me, that are my elders, it's been very, very hard, Stan, to get that message through that marketing, advertising, and budgeting sufficient funds to do the things that you're talking about is appropriate. I think
you're
it's
saying
absolutely
that,
appropriate.
You're saying that the city council
dollars,
doesn't want you to spend money on this?
Challenged on.
You're saying the city council doesn't want you to spend money on this?
I'm telling you that that line item that I have utilized for the exact services that you're talking about has been decreased from $90,000 back in the year 2012 to $35,000 for next year. So, yes, it would seem that way. I'm telling you that's the biggest thing that I've been challenged on, and the more and more my hands are restricted on that, the less and less I can implement the things that you and I are talking about. I think they're important. I think more funding needs to go to it, but if I don't have a council that believes it's adequate for a city of our size to utilize services like that, then I can't get anywhere.
We're talking with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. We've got just a few minutes left for you to get your questions in. Call 765-496-1999. Email ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Wanted to bring you back to the national race for president, and I realized I hadn't asked you yet. As a mayor of a city that has a large Hispanic and Latino population, I feel like I have to get your feelings on Donald Trump's continued speeches about things like cracking down on immigration and building a wall on the southern border of the U.S. Are your constituents talking to you about this? Because this would seem to be an issue that would be important potentially to a lot of people whom you serve.
I think the law-abiding residents that are here appreciate those thoughts. I think having a strong border as a nation and encouraging a legal immigration process that's accessible to all that have made this country what it is today is a good thing. I actually talked to a gentleman. He's the plant chemist at DSM Neo Resins last week, and he was so proud. He's from India. He's immigrated here. He has a PhD. He said, Chris, it was so hard going through the process, but I'm so proud that I'm here. And he couldn't wait. He couldn't wait to exercise his right to vote, and he told me he was supporting Donald Trump and the vision that he has for this country. And I believe it's even more stunning that we continue to focus on comments that Donald Trump has made. And yes, they do offend people at times, but when you have a candidate on the other side of the ticket that makes mistakes and people die, has a pay-for-play resume in terms of her foundation, and really the lack of stability and the lack of leadership that she brought to the office of the Secretary of State and what that has led to in international turmoil and the violence that could be caused from that in our nation, that's pretty scary. So I think there's a very distinct choice for voters this fall, and I can't wait for that choice to be made.
And you don't think people in your city are concerned about the possible racist overtones of Donald Trump's speeches?
I think people are more concerned with the fact that Hillary Clinton has ran a foundation that has taken money from countries that allow women to be raped, that allow women to be spoken down to, and here is a woman that's talking about women's rights issues in our nation. I think people are more concerned with the fact of what happened in Benghazi and patriots that were slain on the watch of Hillary Clinton. I think that's something that people should be more concerned with, the fact that literally my grandchildren will be drowning in debt because of the decisions and the spending that the left has made. I think people are more concerned with that than building strong borders and proposing a strong legal immigration policy in this country. That's what I'm saying.
Let's move on to other things. There's been more intrigue since you and I were last on this program about the ongoing debate over how to use the city's wind ordinance, if at all. The head of that committee that's been studying the issue has stepped down. Does that surprise you?
I think Clark made a personal decision. I think he wants what is best for Clinton County. He's a farmer that has land that a potential wind company would be looking at putting turbines. And I think he just wanted to remove all doubt from people that there wasn't anything below board going on. I know Clark. Clark is a good man. He's going to be a county councilman come January 1. So I think him stepping down was just a personal leadership decision to say, listen, I'm not more important in this process, and I just want everything to be looked at objectively, and I don't want people to bring personal feelings and skews into what should be considered to be right for Clinton County. And that is just truly, is wind energy the right thing for Clinton County, or is it not the right thing? So I applaud his decision. I'm happy with what he did, and I think it's going to be for the best.
You said on last month's program that you weren't sure you were in favor of having more wind turbines or any at all. Do you think that this change in leadership of the committee makes it increasingly unlikely that that's going to happen?
I think it's still open to go either way, Stan. Here's what I think it's going to come down to. I think it's going to come down to potentially, do we want to pay higher taxes or do we want wind energy in Clinton County? Do we want to do the one thing in the eastern half of the county that's going to raise AV that could end up saving the Clinton Central School Corporation? Or do we all want to step up to the plate, and especially those living in the Clinton Central School Corp, and vote a referendum through and pay higher taxes to keep that school alive? Because if we don't, the path it's headed on is consolidation, and then there being less schools in Clinton County, and that could hurt our county economic development as well. So I think that's the question at hand, and that's what our community is wrestling with at this time.
Aren't you oversimplifying that a little bit? Because if you're looking at putting in wind energy, I mean, essentially the way the turbines work is you put them in at the outset and eventually they generate energy, which lowers your electric bills over time and which gives money back to the farmers whose land that they are on. I mean, it's not like there's not some sort of offset, to say nothing of potential renewable energy credits that might be available from the state or the federal government. I mean, aren't we oversimplifying it to say that there would be increased taxes? I mean, you're getting a fair amount on the back end in several other ways, aren't you?
Explain to me what you mean by us being able to capture energy here locally and reducing electrical rates, because that's the one thing I have not heard that yet. So tell me about how that would work.
Well, if you add more electricity to the grid, it's a simple supply and demand equation, because now all of a sudden, if your demand stays the same, and we've talked many times about how your population is relatively constant there in
Frankfurt.
But who
says we'll be on that same grid? We don't even know what grid the electricity would be going to yet.
Well, it's all the same grid. It's a smart grid, and so you're funneling energy into that, and there are many instances, and the woman from White County who presented a couple of months ago said that it's been very helpful in White County to try to, you know, give money back to the farmers whose land these things are on. It's been helpful to make sure that you're not going to have any sort of energy shortage because you've got more energy producers in these turbines. And so I just think it's a little oversimplification to say don't do this because your taxes will go up. That may be true, but you're going to get other benefits in addition, aren't you?
Sure, there will be other benefits. Now, I've been told there's multiple grids. You have a meso grid, so a Midwestern electrical grid. You have a New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland grid. And depending on the deal and the negotiations that the wind company comes up with, that electricity will go to a certain grid. It doesn't mean that the grid that we're on, and we're serviced by IMPA, that IMPA buys power from that grid. Electrons are going to go where electrons want to go. You're correct in saying that, but we need to further understand whether it would truly stabilize the electric rates in Frankfurt. If you are correct, then that brings a totally new component to the conversation, and I think adds very much to the positivity for wind turbines in Clinton County. The argument I bring to the table is simplistic, but it's the thing that hits home the most with people, and it is going to be a very basic decision, because I believe without increasing that AV, we're going to have to do something. We can't continue to sustain what we have with the amount of tax dollars that we're paying. Do I think it will be great for the farmers that are leasing land to the wind turbine companies? Absolutely. Could it be a great thing for Clinton County? Absolutely. But there's also people on the other side of the fence. So again, it's the same thing I've said before. You know, we as a community, as neighbors, are wrestling through all these different issues, and once we have all the information, we will make a decision. I know the wind company is just now starting to send out information. So this is a long process. The process the committee is working through is simply to make suggestions on amendments to the wind ordinance. But ultimately, Stan, it's going to be up to those three commissioners that will be in that seat come January 1 whether wind energy happens in Clinton County or not.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it. Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We'll do it again next month.
Stan, thanks. Have a great week.
Same to you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these shows archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.